This is a Defocus Media production.
Did you know that more than 40% of Americans have myopia? The number is actually increasing at an alarming rate, especially among school-age children. It hasn't helped that many have been spending more time indoors or in front of screens during the ongoing pandemic. Fortunately, you have the opportunity as an eye care professional to help slow myopia progression. When it comes to myopia control in children who are 8 to 12 years of age at the initiation of treatment, MySight One Day is the one for myopia control. It may be the one for your age-appropriate patients as well. And I've got good news. Certification is now open to all eye care professionals for CooperVision's Brilliant Futures Myopia Management Program. Featuring MySight One Day, the first and only soft contact lenses FDA approved to slow myopia progression in children aged 8 to 12 at the initiation of treatment. Once you complete your certification, you'll also have access to resources and support that will help you communicate with patients, grow myopia control in your practice, and make a difference for age-appropriate children with myopia. So act today and change tomorrow. To get started, talk with your CooperVision sales representative or visit CooperVision.com for more information. Hey everybody, I'm your four-eyed professor, Chris Levens, and I'm super excited to talk to you today. Our roll call is for new and experienced ODs, optometry students, and even those just interested in this profession. We'll cover a number of topics together, and I'll help you see them through a professor's eyes. Please take your seats. School's in session. All right, welcome back, everyone. We are talking today about interviewing for success. It really doesn't matter at what part of your career this is going to be applicable for. Whether it's earlier in your career, mid-career, late career, there's going to be probably some opportunity for you to interview for something. Maybe it's a new position, maybe it's a second position, maybe it's something you're going to do on the side, but presenting yourself both on paper and in person is vitally important. And so I'm going to frame this around probably the more common interview, and that is, say, you're interviewing to join a practice and how to present yourself for the best chance of success, given that there may be competition heading your way. All right, so the first thing that we'll start with is probably the most basic, and that is dress and act the part. So when you close your eyes and you think about if you were the interviewer and you were going to meet a bunch of candidates for a job position in optometry, when you close your eyes, what do you imagine the optometrist candidate is going to look like? And do that, act that part, you know, look like it, sound like it, present yourself, look it, because when you create a favorable impression, that then only breeds success. You know, first impressions are really important. They are real. That's why people talk about them. If they weren't real, people wouldn't even have an issue about a first impression. But how you present yourself and how you look does play a part. So when it comes to dressing, you know, don't wear ostentatious clothes or too much jewelry. Don't be too formal, but don't be too casual as well, as either can create an unfavorable impression. When you have an opportunity to get some background information on the practice in which you are interviewing for, try to get some information about how they typically dress and act that part. So for example, if you're interviewing at a practice in which there are male optometrists there that wear suit and ties, well, wear a suit and tie that day. If you're interviewing in a practice where the female optometrist wears a nicer dress, well, wear a nicer dress. Just try to mimic the part of the expectations that they have in place. And so this kind of leads very closely along to what I'm going to get to next, and that's do your homework. So just like you would have done your homework on what dress to wear, I suggest you do your homework on the practice. And I don't mean this in any regard in terms of being sneaky. It's just you want as much information as possible. The whole strategy here that I'm going to encourage you to employ is design yourself to be the missing puzzle piece of that practice. Whatever that gap is, you try to fill in that gap. So when I say do your homework, here are some things that you can really easily do to get some information about a practice. You can look them up on the internet and see what types of visuals they have, see what types of things they're promoting, where their expertise appears to be. Look them up on social media for the same strategy. Call the office at least once, maybe a couple times. You can get a tremendous amount of information by just a phone call. For example, I could call a practice and say, yes, my name is Chris and I'm new to the area. I don't have an optometrist yet. Could you tell me a little bit about your practice? Typically, whoever is answering the phone on the back end, the very first thing that they say to describe the practice in all likelihood is what that practice is the most proud of and their number one attribute. So I'm writing that down and putting a big star there. Then I might just get some more information. If I need an appointment, how long will it take me to get one? Well, that's going to give you information on how booked out the appointment book is. If they say, oh, we have a ton of opportunity today and tomorrow and the next day, well, maybe they don't really need another optometrist. However, if they say, wow, we're really booked up for, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks, okay, they probably really do need another doctor to practice, and that's only going to bode well for you. And then try to get some more information, such as, well, do I have to prepare to get my eyes dilated? Do I need a driver? That could give you information about how frequently the practice dilates eyes. I have a child. Do you guys do pediatric exams? I also have a baby. I also have my mother-in-law's living with us to take care of our infant. Do you take care of geriatrics? And she actually has a lot of health conditions like diabetes and macular degeneration. Do you manage that as well? I've been told I'm a pretty complicated contact lens wear. Could you take care of me too? And then, you know, whatever piques your interest, maybe you're a scleral lens wearer. Well, all those questions, now you can get an idea of how far out the practice is booked, what demographic patients they take care of, infants, teenagers, children, pediatrics, adults, geriatrics, whether they specialize in ocular disease, maybe your caregiver has glaucoma, macular degeneration, you pick it. Contact lenses, whether they do them, whether they appear to specialize in them, whether they do, and then you pick multifocal contacts, scleral lenses, RGPs, whatever you can think of to basically identify where the practice gaps may be. So then, again, you're trying to figure out how you can be the missing puzzle piece for that practice. So, I got all that information down. It may take a call or two. It's probably going to take some information by looking at the internet and social media as well. And then hopefully you've made a contact so that you have an interview coming soon. So then now what? Well, depending on the practice strategy, you may have already had to submit your curriculum vitae, your CV, your resume ahead of time. And maybe that's what got you the interview. Or maybe the expectation is you just bring it along with you. Well, let's pause here for a moment and park on creation and edits of your CV. It's kind of hard to do. It's a little early. This is a really big take home. These will evolve over the course of time in your career. So they should look distinctly different if you're a brand new optometrist versus if you're a seasoned optometrist in terms of content. Depending on who you talk to with regards to what you should put in your CV, there are two schools of thought. And honestly, they could not be more disparate and different in strategies. One school of thought is keep it very concise, very simple, ideally one page, so that at a glance, somebody can look at you, understand what you've done, and move on, because people don't have a lot of time to read through other things. The other strategy, again, couldn't be more different, is to make it as bulky and weighty as possible, that the CV should be many pages and with many details about everything that you've done up until the point of your interview. I agree with the latter 100%, and I'm going to explain why. When it comes to interviewing, I always assume that you're competing with someone or some folks. So anytime you can get a step up on the competition, go for it. I also believe that at some time during the interview process, your paperwork has to stand alone. So, for example, you might be interviewing for a competitive job in which the request is for all CVs to be sent in ahead of time. And maybe that's how this practice is determining who to interview, by just the paper. So you could be the best presenter in the world. You could look the part of the optometrist. You know that you can win once you actually can sit down face to face. But in a system like that, you may not get that chance. It may be your paperwork alone that the practice decides who they're going to interview next. So the paperwork in that case stands alone. In another scenario, maybe everyone's interviewed by, doesn't matter who, it could be the practice manager, could be the owner of the practice, could be an associate of the practice, could be a partner in the practice. And let's say whether it's one-on-one or two-on-one, the interview is complete of all the candidates. Well, then that person or people then typically will get others involved in the decision-making process, and they'll rely on their recollection, their notes, and guess what? The CV. So in that case, it's later in the process, but because people do not have perfect retention, nor do we take perfect notes, we will again rely on the paperwork. And so imagine this. If I was bringing my information to you, let's say you're my partner, and I said, wow, I'm down to two candidates. Could you give me a hand here? And they say, well, you say, sure. And I say, all right, let me hand you a couple CVs, take a look at these, and then we'll talk after you have a chance to review them. And I hand one in your left hand and one in your right hand. And the one in your right hand, noticeably, is 10 plus pages long. The one in your left hand is one page. There is a subliminal message here. Even if it's subconscious, I believe that you, who now have a stack of papers in your right, a single paper in your left, you will subconsciously believe a question, well, why is this one heavier than the other one? Why is this one bulkier than the other one? What does this one have going for it experience-wise that the other one doesn't? Even if it's subliminal, that's a leg and step up. Even if the candidates are identical. In fact, even if the single page candidate actually has more experience than the other candidate, that subliminal message is a step up. So then the common question is, well, what the heck do I put in there to bulk it up? Well, you know, your education, obviously. What you've studied. Early in your career, here's an example of how you could differentiate yourself. If you're graduating from optometry school and there's two candidates, candidate A can say, graduated from optometry school XYZ in 2000 XYZ, and that's it. They have a degree. Candidate B can say, yes, I graduated from this program in this year, and here's an example of the things that I've been responsible for and have achieved. I have, and then just list them out. I've been in second year patient care, third year patient care, and here's the type of patient encounters I typically saw. And I was in fourth year patient care and externships, and here's the type of patients I typically saw. Here's the type of equipment that I routinely examine my patients with, and here's the type of technology equipment I examine my patients with, and just list it out, whatever it is. Visual fields, OCTs by brand, et cetera, et cetera. Because you don't know the questions that somebody else is going to have. So let me give you another example. Let's say you're joining a practice and, I don't know, they just purchased a brand new OCT. And they're wondering, well, let's say it's a Heidelberg Spectralis, OCT, and they're wondering, wow, this is a fairly somewhat complicated, sometimes intimidating piece of equipment for some folks. I wonder if either one of my candidates has experience with this. And they look at the two examples of the CV and they say, wow, this thicker one, yeah, it says right here, experience with the Heidelberg Spectralis OCT. And the other one, again, all it says is graduated their optometry school in the year. Well, the person may have no idea that single page could have had a ton more patients through their Spectralis OCT than the other one, but the fact that it's not on the paper could again be the deciding factor. I know it sounds silly and crazy, but it's not like an interviewer has multiple attempts to reach out and re-question candidates, and the paper at some point in the process stands alone. So the more that you put in there, the better. Now, when you're into practice and you're experienced, well, you're not going to need all those details about what you did in optometry school. You're just going to replace them with what you've done in practice thus far. And that's where I give you this tone that it will evolve over the course of time. But the more details in there, the better. Of course, if you've won some type of a scholarship, an award, if you're a member of an organization, if you're an active member of an organization, list that and what you've done. Both, you know, things that you're involved in your community, both previously and presently, could help you stand apart. Anything that you could put in there to bulk it up that you think somebody might be impressed with, do that, because you really never know what they're going to look at and what they're going to key in on. So let's say whatever part of the time frame of the process this is, you've got your interview and you're getting ready for it. You've dressed the part, and now you're going to go after this interaction with the strategy for being the missile puzzle piece of this practice. So nerves, anxiety. Yeah, they're probably there. And I don't care how old you are or how experienced you are. It's intimidating to be in a selection process in front of somebody else. So the nerves will get the best of all of us. So strategies here. Very much like public speaking, when it comes to the first few words out of your mouth and your presentation, not just your dress, but your facial expressions, here are some thoughts. Sit up in your chair. When you've met somebody face-to-face, look at them in the eyes. Smile. And when it comes to your interaction, the first couple sentences out of your mouth, purposefully talk a little slower than you normally would, and purposefully talk a little louder than you normally would. Just out of the gate. Once you say those first few sentences slower and louder, and this is absolutely applicable to public speaking as well, now you're off to the races in a positive direction. So here's the example. If I'm meeting Dr. Jones, who's interviewing me, and I'm nervous, I may be slouching a little bit in my chair, and I may be talking. When your anxiety creeps up, you tend to talk faster and softer. And if you hear me say, oh, Dr. Jones, hey, I'm Dr. Chris Stevens, and I'm here for interviewing your practice, and you probably can't hear me very well, and I don't exactly appear confident. Whereas if I take the opposite approach, hi, Dr. Jones, yes, Chris Stevens, pleasure to meet you. I'm really excited about this opportunity to sit in front of you and talk about how ideally I could be a great fit for your practice. And then you don't have to think about it ever again. But that does a couple things. By talking slower and louder, initially, it presents confidence. But also, it controls your breathing in your diaphragm. That will also relax you, release some of your anxiety. And if you've smiled up to that point, that also will put you in a positive light, both outwardly and inwardly. So these are all simple things to do. And the talking louder and slower, you only have to think about right out of the gate. All right, well, I'm going to give you the best news right now. The best news is that most people do not interview well, they don't do their homework, and they don't think about what they're saying ahead of time, and they don't have a strategy in mind, whereas now you do. So what do I mean by that? Most interviews for practice start out shockingly with, I want. Like, I want this amount of dollars, and I want this amount of vacation, and I want this benefit, and I don't know if you have dental, but I want dental too, and not just medical. And oh, by the way, do you have any maternity or paternity leave? Yeah, I want that too. Well, when you're, I understand the strategy of being upfront with wants and needs, but now when you sit on the opposite side of the table, you have these demands, and you're putting the emphasis in the wrong place. Because you could really be pushing the interviewer in the corner thinking, oh, geez, you know, internally, I don't know if I can do that. I've never paid an optometrist this much. I wasn't planning on paying an optometrist this much. We don't give those benefits. If I give those benefits to this doctor, I'm going to have to give those benefits to my other doctors or my staff. I don't know if I can afford this. And now you're swinging the interview in the exact wrong way. Take the opposite approach. Don't talk about your wants and needs until the very end or a subsequent interaction. Don't make it about wants. It's not that it's that important, but that's not what you lead with. Again, you're trying to strategize as being the missing puzzle piece again. So in the homework that you did pre-interview, maybe you found out that this practice is well established. It's been around for a while. As the practice has gotten older, so has the patient base. And there's no particular optometrist in the practice that especially likes taking care of children. And so they do a great job with adults and teenagers and geriatrics, but it's not a very big pediatric setting. So maybe that's what you lead with. It's say, well, one of the things I've always wanted to do in practice is take care of children as a part of my emphasis. Because I've found that when you, not only do I really enjoy it, but when you succeed with children, it impresses the parents. It impresses the grandparents. And I found that not only do we have, when we have children in the practice, they're going to be alive for quite a long time, and they'll continue to grow the practice for quite a long time. But as if we're successful with them, they then get their parents to book additional appointments, and their grandparents and their caregivers and their friends and their classmates. So all it does grow, and it's a really simple addendum for something that I love to do, but I think it actually can help the practice too. So what did that do? Well, number one, it frames the interaction in the opposite way of pushing the doctor in the corner as the first example did. Well, now the doctor's thinking, oh yeah, I really don't like to take care of kids in my practice. I'm super excited that somebody else does. And yeah, you know what? If this new doc can bring in the pediatric patients, they'll be in the practice for a number of years. But better yet, I'm going to see my appointment books grow and my partners grow, because if we make the children happy, they may get their parents and grandparents and caregivers to book as well. And that's going to grow. So now you're framing the conversation in, wow, yeah, this is really a nice addendum to my practice, and it's going to help me, it's going to help practice growth, and now you're not getting the doctor worried, you're getting the doctor excited. Let me give you a big take home here, though. It makes no difference to me in the world whether, in this example, you love pediatric patients, and if this was your mission in optometry or not, get your foot in the door and you go from there. That's the most important piece. Early in my career, I practiced optometry in ways that I never thought I would as a student. I did it all. I did primary care. I did low vision. I did pediatric care. I did vision therapy. And it's not because I loved all of those things. It's because those were things that the practice I was in needed. And why not deliver there? It's only going to help you out in the end and firmly entrench yourself as a vital cog in the practice. None of this stuff is complicated. It's all about strategy, putting yourself in a positive light, doing your homework first, presenting yourself in an impressive, confident fashion, and for probably the 15th time I've said it today, trying to position yourself as the missing puzzle piece of the practice. In where, whatever and whenever this interview is, early in the career, mid-career, late career, it all applies. The great news, it's simple, and even better news, it really works. So interview for success. I would love it if everybody listening was successful. So go on and try Optometric Career, win every interview battle you tackle, and hopefully you will be a tremendous success. And if it works for you, please pass it on to others. Thanks, everybody. Class is ended for today, and we have no exams or grades approaching. Please email me at foureyedprofessor@gmail.com if there are topics that you would like to hear and see through a professor's eyes.